Hey, Mallory, me again.
Hi, Flora. How's it going?
Good. So last episode, we extinguished your burning question. Why do news anchors talk in that recognizable anchor voice? We found that anchor style traces back to the accent of white Midwestern men almost a century ago. And that even today, there's plenty of bias against people whose accents don't conform. And if you haven't heard that episode, listen to that one first, because Mallory's question opened like a whole Pandora's voice box.
In my head, it just seemed like a simple question, like, oh, they all sound the same. So, like, what's that about? I honestly did not think that it would take me here.
And we're not even there yet. This news story continues because anchor voice is just one part of the anchor persona.
Tell me more. It's funny because I usually get more questions about appearance and hair, more so than my voice.
I want to introduce you to Sia New Yorker. She's worked as a TV news journalist all over the country for more than 20 years. And now she's a reporter and anchor at the CBS affiliate in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi, Mallory. Good morning to you. Hey, Sia.
So when Sia started working in TV news, she wasn't hearing about her voice, but she was getting other criticism.
It was like, hey, you need to lose 40 pounds. And maybe, you know, if you're size, you know, 6 or 8 or 10, maybe, you know, you can get a job in this market. And for years, you need to take off your glasses, Sia. Or, you know what, your hair, you need to get a wig. You need to get a weave. You need to, I mean, it was always something. It was always something appearance related.
Just to like casually drop, oh yeah, you just need to lose 40 pounds, as if that's just like, oh yeah, you just need to go and, you know, I don't know, have a breath mint. Like it's just, as if it's just like this really easy, easy thing. And then also just like, just go get a wig. Okay. All right.
I know. And Sia said for an anchor, the hairpiece is big.
There's so much power in hair. In most women, even white women, you had to wear your hair straight. It had to be a certain length. You know, everyone had to look the same. No way could you wear locks and braids. Like, you had to look a certain way. Off the face, short, you know, bob to the chin. That was just it, straight.
The thing that, like, sort of sticks out in my head, though, about appearance and about hair is that, okay, let's say that she was wearing box braids. It's not like a sloppy or a throwaway style. I mean, like, it takes time and, like, it takes a lot of effort to have hair that, like, looks and is styled that way. So for it to just be cast aside as something that's just like, oh, that's not a great, beautiful work of art. It's just like, come on, come on.
Yeah, it's like anchor voice. People are expected to conform to this very narrow white standard.
It is the same form of discrimination. It's just a different way. It's the same form. It's wanting people to conform and be something that they feel is the standard.
So for a long time, Sia had her hair relaxed and straightened. She wore wigs.
No way would I have been encouraged at the beginning of my career to wear my hair natural. I would not have gotten a job. It just is what it is. There's no way. Like, I'll be honest with you. When I was starting out in the business, I was not able to wear my hair natural, not because somebody told me I couldn't, but because when they hired me, we had a hair, we had consultants, and the consultant or the manager would say, hey, I think she should have a bang. Hey, I think you should cut her hair.
And it was the manager.
The manager. And she got that from the focus groups and she got that from the consultants.
Oh my God.
I'm telling you.
I feel like that's like a sick form of control. Like that doesn't seem right.
It is. But sadly, we sign up for it. We sign these contracts that give control of our appearance, you know, over to our managers. You sign them. There's these clauses in that says, you know what? I hired you with short hair and a bang. And if you want to dye it blonde and make it curly, you're going to have to get permission.
Oh,
my consultants have to sign. And that is how it has always been that way in TV news. Always.
It's so dehumanizing. It really. I mean, It's just like the things that make you your special human, we're just going to take that away.
Yeah, and Sia felt like she had no choice but to go with it.
We want to work so bad and be accepted, and we want to do our work, and this is what we do. Like, I mean, you know, this is, we're encouraged to get in the game. Get in the game, and then you can make some changes. And for myself, I can say that I did do that. You know, I did do that.
A few years ago, Sia decided to wear her hair natural on TV, and it was a big decision.
When I tell you, I had knots all night long. I almost didn't do it. It's funny. I went to an NABJ convention in Detroit, the National Association of Black Journalists, and I wasn't looking for a job, which is sad that you have to switch your appearance when you're looking for a job. That used to be what you had to do. And now I'm like, I'm not looking for a job. I'm secure. I'm good in Cleveland. I love it here. And so I wore my hair up in natural hair buns. You know, I don't want to say a frohawk, but like I had three like buns on top of my head. Not something you typically see on TV. and I had a ball. I came back from NABJ and it was Sunday night and it was time to go in Monday morning. And I said, I don't want to take my hair down and wash it, blow dry it, straighten it. This is going to take hours. I have a lot of hair and I don't feel like cornrowing it to put my wig on. I said, you know what? I just don't want to. So I just went to bed. But I tossed and I turned and I said, OMG, tomorrow. Like, what am I going to do? Am I going to walk in? Are they going to take me? And I said a prayer. I prayed. I did. I'm dead serious. I prayed. And I walked in there and I said, you know what? If they pull me in the office and they tell me that I can't wear my hair this way, I said, you know what? I'm going to fight. I'm taking this up. I'm going to make them see that this is ridiculous. I'm the same reporter. But no one said anything. And I went on reporting for like a couple days. Then my assistant news director in the middle of the newsroom one day, he's just like, did you do something different with your hair? And I mean, my heart was pounding. And I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is it. What am I going to do? And he said, oh my God, I love it. Sia, you look great. And I said, so it was this big, I had built out this big thing in my mind that it was going to be, and it wasn't. And from then on, I was free.
I love that so much. I love that so much. Also, I want to get, you know what? I'm going to fight on a t-shirt. Like, that's amazing.
So at Sia's work, no one bristled, but that's, of course, not always the case. Let's zoom the news camera out for a second and get a wide shot.
So, you know, that decision, right, that struggle that she is describing is something that is common to many Black women that are in professional settings.
This is Ashley Shelby Rosette.
I'm a professor and senior associate dean at the Fuqua School of Business at Duke University.
Ashley has studied how natural hair is perceived in the workplace. So she showed people photos of job applicants. They were Black women and white women wearing various hairstyles, and she asked participants to evaluate these women on different things, including professionalism and hireability.
And we showed that Black women who wore their natural hair were evaluated as less professional than Black women who donned straight hair. And we also showed that Black women who wore their natural hair were less likely to be hired than Black women who wore straight hair.
Yeah, I mean, it not surprising at all.
None of this was news to Ashley either.
Yeah, I don't think that anything surprised us about these findings. To be honest, you know, I was thinking about, you know, my own personal experiences and my own journey with regards to natural hair. And I've had struggles with this myself. I remember being an undergraduate who proudly wore her braids. But when it came time to start work, I took those braids out and I wore my hair straight. And I felt as though I needed to do that because I did not want to be judged on my hairstyle.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely, I've been there. The place where I work now, they're really diverse and like all about people being who they are. But I didn't know that until I really started working there. So in my interview, I wore my hair in a tight bun and at the back of my head. Because it's just like, you just don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. It's the little accommodations that we all, as Black women, just make just to sort of get by and like survive and figure out if a space is safe before you can be who you are.
Yeah, this is about a lot more than hair.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This really fundamentally is a question of identity and all that is associated with the identity of Black women. You have to really recognize the history of hair and of Black hair here in the United States. Black hair has never been something that has been universally celebrated. And in fact, if you go to the 1700s, you'll see where there are actually laws where Black women were prohibited from wearing their natural hair in public and actually had to wrap their natural hair. Similarly, you look at things like the hot comb, and the hot comb was this invention that was supposed to tame the unkempt and the unwieldy hair of Black women and was a sign of status. So literally, the way in which you are born is not celebrated, but is actually demeaned. And so when you think about the history of Black hair in this country, you can see how in the workplace, this is not just hair.
Wow. Can you imagine something that happens with your body naturally just being illegal?
No.
That's just wild.
And I think this is, you know, Ashley was giving me like the thumbnail sketch. You could do a whole 10-part series on this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there are a lot of strands.
You did it.
Okay, here's where we are today. In 36 states, it's still legal to discriminate against people based on natural hair. Wearing your hair natural can get you fired. Students have been disciplined, expelled, and banned from playing sports or attending graduation, all for refusing to change their natural hair. But there are signs things are changing. In 2017, the military made waves by allowing locks, and there is a bill in Congress that would ban discrimination based on natural hair.
So the Crown Act, which stands for Creating a Respectful and Open World for Natural Hair, it was created in 2019. Now, just last month, there was a great deal of celebration because the Crown Act was actually passed in the House. This was House Bill 2116.
But it's been lingering in committee in the Senate, which means that there's no federal law yet.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, there are women making a bang with their hair.
We have now a Supreme Court justice who wears sister locks. That in and of itself is simply amazing. I mean, obviously, she's a trailblazer, she's groundbreaking, she's accomplished. But when you have someone at that level, she is scrutinized to no degree. You know, they vetted her inside, outwards, forward, backwards, you know, all the way around. So that also means that they are scrutinizing her hair. So now you have news outlets that would never even knew what sister locks are. And now they're doing entire pieces on sister locks. And so I think the more we have an understanding of natural hair, the more likely we are to minimize the extent to which hair discrimination is to occur. And to have such a prominent counter stereotype to the narrative that we tend to put on Black hair, I think is simply wonderful. And that is progress.
I've got chills right now. Yes. Hell yes.
I would also put Sia in the hair blazer category.
Every day I wake up and I'm like, I'm going to wear my afro, you know, I'm going to wear my Ruby Woo lipstick. I'm going to wear my big, you know, glasses and my hot pink blazer and, you know, and my sneakers and my little dress. And I'm going out and I'm going to tell this story and help this community get some answers. And I get to be my most authentic self. I'm grateful for that. Like, I'm thankful and I'm like, this is how it's supposed to be.
Yes. Yes.
She was like, I'm going to fight and she's winning.
Yeah. Publicly winning. It sends like such a good message to when you see other people able to like live authentically, as she says, then it gives you permission to also do that thing.
Okay, tonight when you watch the news, what's going to be on your mind?
So besides listening to the facts that they're going to be presenting to me, I'll be thinking about all the little quiet revolutions that are happening. Even though the people who are on the screen, they're not going to be talking about their bodies or they're not going to be talking about their hair, even by like standing out and being different than what is the norm for a news anchor. When I see those things, I'll be like, yes, I see you. You're doing it. I see it.
If you have a burning question you can't get out of your head, give us a ring. 833-RING-ELT. And if you missed part one, our episode on Anchor Voice, check it out. It's the episode before this one in the feed.
This episode was produced by Jahi Whitehead, Kayla Stokes, Hadley Robinson, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Doug Barron. Our editors were Jorge Just, Caitlin Kenny, and Anoa Changa. Nicole Basulka is our fact checker. Scored by Emma Munger and Bobby Lord. Mixed by Catherine Anderson. Every Little Thing is a Gimlet production and a Spotify original podcast. Here's where I say goodbye. Goodbye.